SARS, Deputy Minister Dr. Masondo. Sister Tebogo and Alan, do we have a quorum to so that we can start with the meeting? Hello, Alan and Sister Tebu.
Yes, sir, we do.
Okay. We have a quorum.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
That's great. Since yesterday, I've had the challenges with the connectivity. Vodacom systems have been down almost the whole of, or the better half of yesterday and this morning. So I'm using an iPhone to log into the meeting. As I've already welcomed members of the committee, the Deputy Minister, SARS, National Treasury, and parliamentary officials, the meeting is officially open. Let's move to roll call and apologies. Do we have apologies?
We have an apology for Mr. Wangwa.
Okay.
That's the only apology I received.
Okay. No, thanks. Let's move to item three. Today's meeting is about getting a briefing from National Treasury as the lead department and SARS as an agency responsible for revenue collection on the two commissions that have been appointed and a committee to the effect of in the final analysis, they gave recommendations as to how can SARS improve its efficiency in regard to the collection of revenue and also improve governance and management of SARS as an entity responsible for revenue collections. So the committee have raised concerns as to whether these recommendations of the CARTS Commission, the Nugent, and the Davis Tax Committee are being implemented. And if they are being implemented, how do you try to synchronize the recommendations of the two commissions and the committee? Because at the time or at the era in which we are quite worried about the declining revenue collections. You'll remember that SARS and National Treasury have projected a decline of plus 320 billion or so. That's a lot of money with the challenges that we are facing in regard to COVID. And even before COVID, the economy was having serious challenges. We witnessed the downgrading again in the past 3 days. We don't know what it means. As a committee, we have been received briefing from Treasury. What are the consequences of this never-ending downgrading by rating agencies? So it is against that background that we thought it prudent that we should convene this meeting to get a briefing as to how the recommendations of the two commissions and the committee are being implemented. Because sometimes you have got the situation where a commission gets appointed And after a commission has tabled the recommendations either to the president or the minister, the executive authority appoints another commission or a committee to recommend how to implement the recommendations of a commission. And that in itself cost the state lots of money, because commissions don't come cheap. They cost lots of millions to the fiscus. So I was trying to sketch that background so that we understand as to why we have invited National Treasurer and SARS to this meeting. Deputy Minister, I hope you are the one who's going to give an input, then probably officials will come after you. Over to you.
Afternoon, Chair, and to members of the Standing Committee on Finance and other members or colleagues who are on this platform. And thanks so much for giving us this opportunity, Chair, to present on the progress that we are making in implementing the recommendations of the commissions that have since been appointed, particularly the Nugent Commission. And you are correct, Chair, that our economy is not doing well. And if the economy is not doing well, our ability to generate revenue also gets badly affected. And you're right that we can't rely on borrowing to finance our responsibilities as the state. Borrowing is not sufficient. I mean, it's not sustainable. And the fact that we are increasingly getting downgraded, it means that the cost of borrowing will also be higher. And as a result, we'll continue to spend more money on the debt service cost. So looking at how we grow the economy as a necessary condition for us to tackle unemployment, raise revenue, it's something that is very, very critical and urgent task that we will execute through the economic recovery plan that the president has announced. And of course, our capacity to generate revenue to finance the needs of South Africans do not only rely on economic growth, but on the institutional capacity of SARS, because the economy can grow, but if we are not able to extract revenue through SARS, we will still not be able to generate the necessary revenue that we need. And since its establishment, SARS has had a couple of commissions which look at the best ways to strengthen SARS capacity to extract revenue to finance state functions. In a post-apartheid South Africa, there have been three commissions, namely CAS or CAF, Davis and Nugent Commission, to look at different aspects of SARS governance and institutional capacity. The CAF Commission was established to look at an institutional design and metrics, governance metrics consistent with the democratic constitution. In addition to governance issues, the Davis Commission also made certain recommendations on the tax policy, including base erosion and profit shifting. The Nugent Commission was established to look at the allegations of poor governance and mismanagement at SARS. And this was framed as state capture, which had engulfed many of our state institutions in the recent years. It's almost 2 years since the Nugent Commission completed its work. And indeed, the Commission confirmed instances of maladministration, mismanagement at SARS. And we're here to report, Chair, on the work that is being done to make sure that these recommendations are implemented. And in implementing the Nugent recommendations, which are necessary, our view is that we need to go beyond them because they are not sufficient to put SARS on a long trajectory of excellence. In other words, as much as we need to implement this recommendation, we need to go beyond what Nugent has recommended to make sure that SARS is one of the best revenue authority in the world and recover the lost ground that we have lost in the past. And you'll be pleased, Chair, to know that we are not appointing another committee to appoint the commission's recommendation, the Nugent and other commissions as recommendations. We are doing it ourselves. But in doing so, we've got the division of labor between ourselves as National Treasury as well as SARS, just to make sure that we implement these recommendations. So guiding our division of labor between SARS and National Treasury in the implementation of these recommendations, we've conceptualized our division of labor in terms of the governance of SARS and governance in SARS. So we are, as National Treasury, largely responsible for the implementation of recommendations that are related to what the Commissioner will say, governance of SARS, and is responsible for the recommendations that are about governance within SARS itself. So the governance of SARS recommendations will include the legislative and policy environment within which SARS operates. But SARS does not set a policy environment, the legislative environment within which it operates. Otherwise, if it were to do so, it will be a referee and a player at the same time. So, and some of those legislative amendments, we obviously have to bring it to your attention for your consideration. And there has been a number of things that we've done on the front of the governance of SARS, including the appointment of the commissioner, who has been appointed. I think he took office on the 1st of May 2020 with a daunting task of collecting revenue during an economic downturn and rebuilding SARS under very difficult conditions. And I think he will report on the things that he has done with respect to governance of SARS, management of SARS, is concerned. And regarding the governance of SARS, we will present, Chair, what we have done so far, insofar as that area is concerned. But you'll also recall that the previous feedback session, which you convened in September 2019, we indicated our initial progress, and at the time, we had envisaged a busy legislative program for 2020 to give effect to many of the governance recommendations from the Nugent Commission. Unfortunately, Chair, that program was overtaken by the extraordinary demands imposed by the outbreak of COVID. Therefore, today we'll provide feedback on our progress against the 27 specific recommendations in the final report, though we'll also include progress in addressing other challenges identified in the report. Chair, let me ask take this opportunity and ask Momo to present what we will call the governance of SARS. What is it that we're doing in that regard? And what is it that we're planning to do? And we will also outline the timelines within which we intend to implement or conclude the recommendations that came from the New Dent Commission, and later on the SARS Commissioner, without me coming back, he will lay out what are the things that they are doing internally, and he will also be at liberty to raise any other issue that is related to SARS, given where we are and where we should be going. Let me hand over to Momo to do the brief presentation, and that will be followed by the SARS Commissioner. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Momonias, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and morning to honorable members and everybody else. I don't know if Ellen is going to put up or my presentation. Thanks, Ellen. So, Chair, just a minor correction on what the Deputy Minister said. The Commissioner was appointed 1st of May 2019, Deputy Minister last year, not this year. So just to correct that minor year issue. So, Chair, if you look at, and frankly, when I look back, 2019 seems like years ago, just with COVID. So it's quite recent that the Commissioner was appointed. So it's only been there about 1.5 years now. Next slide, sorry. So, Chair, the final report of the Nugent Commission was published around the 14th December 2018. By the presidency, because as you know, commissions report to the president. So I think the judge had submitted sometime in November, but there was a legal action that the former commissioner had taken out. And when his court application was dismissed, the presidency then was able to release the report around the 14th of December. The Commission had issued an interim report in October 2018, and in fact that the main recommendation in the interim report was the removal of the then Commissioner, which then was instituted by the President around, I think it was March 2019. So the disciplinary, the commissioner had been suspended in March 2018, and there was both a disciplinary process, which ran in parallel, and when the Nugent recommendation came, the president had then remove the former commissioner. So it gave effect to the first recommendation in the interim report almost immediately, and the process then to appoint the new commissioner started in February 2019. And I should add, Chair, that that was also done in terms of a whole recommendation of how the process should function, that it should be very transparent, it should have a panel of largely people who weren't operating in the political sphere, it had integrity, and that they had to then provide a report to the minister which could be made public. So it was a pretty transparent process, but the judge did say that the interview process needed to be a what he called a private process or closed process, where cameras weren't allowed, but there would be reporting on the process thereafter. So that was what happened. So I think I won't go into the Nugent Commission. I think it outlined many instances of maladministration and mismanagement between 2014 and 2017. That was the scope or the period that it looked at. It looked at the problems, just to remind members, of the disastrous restructuring of SARS, which interestingly seemed to have been hatched between Spain and a former commissioner, even before Commissioner Moyani was appointed commissioner. So it was all done very secretly and without Bain even knowing what SARS was about, that they already had slides which are available, which the commission released, and that was done on the sworn oath of the former head of Bain, which outlined some of the planning that took place in 2013. So lots of key institutions were weakened, enforcement was weakened. As the commission said, the units that investigated illicit trade ceased to exist. Revenue collection suffered. Yes, some of the decline was due to the economies, but I think a significant part was because the institution had been so weakened. So its ability, the large business center, for example, had also been fragmented and broken up to report in other ways. There were massive abuse of procurement processes, especially around large scale contracts. And many of these were referred to the criminal authorities. I think, Chair, this is one area that also needs to be followed up, is what the criminal prosecuting authorities have done on the recommendations that relate to criminal investigations that should be taken up. Again, some of the multinationals that were consultancies that were involved, and the former commissioner. But there were 27 specific recommendations. I mean, there's a lot in the report that outlines the problems and so on, but the commission narrowed itself to these 27. And the long-term objective, I think, was to get a robust organizational and decision-making culture for SARS. It focused a lot on how to prevent future abuse, how to get governance right. Sorry, next slide. And so, in a sense, it outlined, and I think, Chair, like what the Deputy Minister has said, there's governance processes obviously within SARS and there's governance processes over SARS. In terms of the within SARS process, the way the current legislation is on SARS, the commissioner is really, all the power of SARS resides with the commissioner. And that's why if you have a bad commissioner, it can be disastrous. And so the commission put in place various structures. They in particular talked about establishing an inspector general's office, and that was largely to ensure that there wasn't abuse in the way SARS functions, as opposed to, I should say, what the Ombud does. So this is not how there may be abuse with regard to a particular taxpayer's affairs by SARS, that they go to the Ombud. The Inspector General is an inspector. He or she would go and see how is SARS doing large settlements. For example, if you do large settlements and they very cushy settlements, the company involved is certainly not going to complain that they were badly done by. The issue was the settlement fair to the country? And so they would be able to deal with that. If there was, I mean, SARS officials get to know that there were problems, who do they go to? Because the provisions of secrecy within SARS are pretty strong. And so you want some sort of way in which these abuses can be picked up. And I should add, Chair, that, I mean, SARS is extremely powerful in the type of data it holds against every taxpayer. And certainly, you see it even in the U.S., for example, when it came to the tax affairs of the current president. Even when those things are released by a taxpayer, you know, nothing stops a taxpayer from making their tax affairs public. But certainly, I think for all taxpayers, they don't want their tax information to be put out there. There are some countries, by the way, that do that, especially in the Scandinavian countries, but we won't go there now in our current system. So the governance and oversight issues are in the prerogative of the Minister of Finance to initiate, obviously to develop the policy and take it to Cabinet for approval. And some of it will require hard legislation, so it will require amendments to the SARS Act. Next slide. So, Chair, I mean, when we look at tax reforms, obviously there's the area of tax policy, and much of that has been done all the time, whether it's introducing a carbon tax, whether it's in 1994 when we came into government, we found that there was gender discrimination, for example, against mainly women, and obviously there was race-based discrimination in the tax system. So tax policy would address how corporates were taxed. There was a secondary tax on companies. There were issues within the personal income tax system. All of those generally would get resolved. Normally it's done incrementally, as you see, Chair, when you get the annual TLAB bill that we've just that you just processed a few weeks ago. But generally, when there's a major change, when there's a new tax that comes, or we want to do move from towards a residency-based system that we shifted towards, those were big changes. They require a commission to go into it, come up with proposals. It's out for public comment. And they become very involved processes. So those major changes that we have, they tend to be done through a commission, and it normally takes a few years before they can be put in place. And it's a whole cycle. Then there's tax administration issues that's dealt with normally in the tax administration laws bill. The so-called TALAB bill, and this also obviously it was dealt with in a big way when the TALAB bill was put in place. But aside from that, nowadays it's also very IT driven, as you see with this year's automated personal income tax assessments. So it's both legislation and the systems changes that they have to make, I think, are enormous. And lastly, I think it's just the oversight and governance over SARS. And that's what we'll focus on today. But I will touch on the tax policy changes very briefly, since the Chair has asked about not just Nugent, but the committee has asked us to talk about the other commissions. So I'll quickly just go through a history of these commissions. Next slide. So Chair, you know, I think all governments tend to have major commissions on tax, on their tax system, probably at least, I would say, once every 20 years, say. Sometimes it might be every 10 years, but they tend to have a major commission. So even well before 1994, you had the Franson Commission in 1969, and just before 1994, you had the Margo Commission. And in fact, many of the approaches towards SARS were first raised in the Margo Commission on this, on the autonomy of the Revenue Collection Agency. When some of us went into government in 94, 95, we found that in the Treasury building, there were floors that was what is now SARS. So I think, if I remember, there was a 16th floor, you had the Commissioner for Inland Revenue. You also had, separate from that commissioner, you had a commissioner for excise, I think it was called, customs and excise. So they were separate, they were departmental officials, they got paid like us officials do. And then in 94 was the first, I'm sure it's the first commission that the new democratic government set up. And it was set up within 3 months of the election. And if you remember, I think President Mandela was only sworn in sometimes in May. So by June, sorry, he set up the Katz Commission, which was chaired by Mr. Michael Katz. Judge Davis was also a member of that commission, and there were other notables at the time. And that commission led to, well, let me just go through. And then in 2013-14, there was the Davis Tax Committee that was set up. I should add here that that was not a commission, it was a committee. To have a commission, you have to, it's the president who has to announce it or approve it. But the Davis Tax Committee was a ministerial advisory committee. And of course, then in 2018, you had the Nugent Commission, which was established by the president. We can move on. Next slide. So, Chair, just to take you quickly through the history, the Margo Commission, I think, talked about the need to have some form of original authority given to the Inland Revenue. It talked at the time. Katz Commission took up that theme, and in its very first report, which was then, within 3 months of the commission being established in 94, they already then talked about the need in their interim report for an autonomous administration, that which they then took up in a further report, in their third report. They had 11 reports over quite a few years, but their third report was done by 1995. And it largely laid the basis for SARS, and you can see Section 2 of the SARS Act in 1997 said that it's hereby established as an organ of state within a public administration, but outside the public service. So there were no longer officials, government officials like some of us are in the Treasury. And there was initially a requirement for a board. If I remember, it was chaired by the first Chief Justice of our country, Michael Cobbett, who is now late. But that provision was removed in an amendment in 2002. Next slide, please. So, okay, I think I've gone through these points. I'm not going to go through any. As I said, there were 8 reports that were published. 8 or 11, I'm not sure, but I might have the number wrong. If you look at the interim report, for example, it just didn't deal with the establishment of SARS, but it also removed race-based and gender-based discrimination from our system, which was speedily implemented, I should say. And it also dealt with obvious things like integrating all the different Bantustan tax administrations with the so-called apartheid South Africa administration. And I think importantly, it laid the basis for the merging of Inland Revenue and Customs and Excise. Next slide. Okay. So, Chair, I think it picked up on issues like independence and management autonomy of SARS. It picked up on modernization. And as I said, it unified Inland Revenue and Customs and Excise departments. Now, this was a big step, Chair, and that's why even in 2016, when there was the Border Management Authority Bill before Parliament, without much consultation with the Treasury and SARS, it sought to split and fragment SARS by taking Customs and Excise the customs function away from SARS. And I think there's many good reasons why you can't split and fragment SARS. And that was, a proposal that came with no real evidence-based research. And it largely then also got, there was great resistance from Treasury to that fragmentation, and eventually the bill was passed last year. But the provisions to take customs away from SARS was removed. So though government had taken the CATS Commission, it had implemented the recommendations in the in 1997 when establishing SARS. Even later, you can see there were attempts that even though the Davis Tax Committee also advised that it would be absolutely the wrong thing to do, but we still had to deal with those issues. Next slide. We can move on. I've dealt with this. Chair, then the Davis Tax Committee has also been extremely productive. It's had 41 reports. I should add that these reports, they take on a different form. They kind of a bit more agile in the sense that they take on current issues. And broadly, our approach is that our tax system is generally a good one. Yes, over time, you get too many tax incentives in the system, which undermines the tax base. And a lot of these provisions we engage over. Some are very complex, like if you want to look at estate duty, so we take some of those proposals into account. Some, for example, when we increase VAT, there was that discussion. The Davis Tax Committee also came up with a proposal. So it sort of gets integrated into the annual work of the department. There are some proposals, too, that we may sometimes not agree on, or some that might take much longer to implement. They've also done a lot of work on BEPS and so on. So that's it. Next slide. So I'll go into the Nugen proposals now. I think the big issue was to deal with to restore trust and get tax morale, to diffuse decision-making powers and oversight, and I think to restore the fundamental link between tax admin and fiscal policy. Chair, I won't go into the detail. We're just taking particular aspects, paragraphs that have been dealt with. Next slide. So, as I said, the urgent proposal was done. There's a whole host of findings on procurement, staffing, operational matters. These really have, the commissioner will deal with. For example, they would have IT contracts or contracts with Bain, Hogan Lovells. All of that the commissioner will report on. I mean, as I said, in the current legislation, it's only the commissioner who can move on these things. The minister and nobody else can interfere or get involved with the powers of the commissioner over SARS. Next slide. So, as I said, the key issues are around governance and strengthening the organizational leadership, the role of an inspectorate, the need for an executive committee. There's a proposal there to have at least one deputy commissioner. It's not in favor of an oversight board. The Davis Tax Committee had a different approach, so there's very different views on the role of a board. I think even in our own discussions. It's something we're still engaging on. And finally, when we do come out with a policy paper, I think we'll put the pros and cons, because there are reasons either way, I think, to consider. I think that the Commission also affirmed the role of the Office of the Tax Ombud. And as I said, that is quite different from that of the Inspector General. I know that the current chair, the judge, has raised the issue of should it not be combined. But I think when we've looked at it, we don't think that the two should be combined. They're very different responsibilities. We can move on. But these are just initial thoughts, Chair. We definitely come up with a paper to put the pros and cons on all of these things, which we hope to get published by budget day. So it's not June. I should say that we want to get the discussion document by budget day and take comments and so on by the June. We had committed to doing it this year, and as the DM said, Deputy Minister said, this was simply not possible with all the COVID tax bills that we did, for example. It was a lot of work we did. If you remember, the tax system kicked in very early on with a response to COVID. Next slide. So, Chair, this is the timetable that we have, and it's I'm very happy the committee is forcing us to give you a timeline. So we think that we'd certainly be able to release the discussion paper that we've promised by budget day. It will then take us a month or two to process those. And I'm very hopeful personally that we can provide the minister draft legislation then for comment between June and September. Hopefully around the TLEF process, and the Minister of Finance will get the Cabinet approval then to release it for public comment first, and then to have it tabled later in the year and to bring it to the committee towards the end of next year in the last quarter. And an optimistic scenario is that it could be passed by the end of next year. But typically these things take a bit longer, but I don't think we should delay beyond June 2022. Chair, I think I'll stop there. I think that's the last slide. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Momania. Over to you, Commissioner.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I will go straight into my presentation. I'll share my screen with you. So we have previously, Chair, shared some of the updates with the committee. So this is just a further update and progress that we've made. But I will also just run through all of the recommendations just to give a coherent feedback here. So I think Mr. Momonia touched on this, but this just affirms the fact that the recommendation for SFARS was an autonomous institution, independent within public administration but outside of the public service, because it envisaged that SFARS needed certain capabilities that it would not be able to build and achieve if it was simply part of the public service. The other important thing I thought I should point out, because I come back to that later, is that the commissioner is appointed by the president, but works under the policy guidance of the minister. The Commissioner also has, in law, a mandate to advise the Minister on matters concerning tax revenue and to advise the Minister of Trade and Industry on matters of import and export. And then SARS is funded according to the estimates of income and expenditure, and may also be determined in a manner that has to be agreed between the minister and the commissioner and ultimately approved by Parliament. This is an area I think that I'd like to touch on later on, because it comes back to the work of rebuilding SARS. And then once funds has been appropriated to SARS, it has to be determined and managed in agreement with between SARS and the minister, subject to the PFMA. Now, coming therefore to the state of SARS, I think it's important that whilst we will today report to you on progress against the Nugent recommendations, that if one goes through the diagnostic as presented by Nugent, the work that is required in the rebuilding of SARS is significantly more than just the narrow implementation of the recommendations. And that's quite important that the work we are currently engaged in the Nugent Commission recommendations is important, very important, but not sufficient to engage in the project of rebuilding SARS into a capable revenue authority, capable of providing the state its resources and to manage the legitimate trade across its borders and to ensure a highly compliant tax base. And I think it's important that the committee just zooms out and sees that the project we are currently engaged in is significantly more than what Nugent says. But since we have to report on Nugent, we will. And I think we have seen the slide before, a summary or a précis of the Nugent diagnostic referred to a failure of governance and integrity, the so-called Bain operating model that was deliberately sought to render the organization incapable of fulfilling its mandate. It manifested in a number of ways. Examples of that was the dismantling of the large prisoner center, of other units within SARS, including the High Court Litigation Unit, and the capacity to deal with the illicit economy was severely compromised also during the unfortunate narrative that emerged between subject or after 2014. The SARS modernization program became a huge casualty of this, and we are paying the price of that today. We continue to be under an underinvestment in this, and this will continue to hamper the organization for years to come. Significant impact on senior employees who were either exited or marginalized, and a significantly weakened leadership. That then resulted in the three declining trends that we have seen: a decline in revenue performance, internally in employee morale and confidence, and externally in public confidence. Internally, we observed the high levels of trauma and distrust by amongst leaders. We had to deal with specific integrity challenges at the level of leadership. Many people were in jobs that they weren't necessarily suited for, and there was generally just a decline in performance. And then in capability, we see the numbers of actual people in technical roles that had exited throughout that period. I want to now go, Chair, to the specific recommendations. Nugent explicitly records 16 recommendations, which we break down into 27 sub-recommendations. Of those, 10 of it falls into the National Treasury mandate, the purpose of Mr. Mamoniat's presentation earlier, and the others are within the domain of SARS. And we will share with you this morning that 14 of those recommendations have been implemented, and another 5 are in various degrees of progress. I'm not going to go through the detail of the ones we have covered before, but I will just mention to you, Chair, that in terms of the overall procurement issues, many of them from our perspective have been implemented. We are also pleased to say that we have strengthened our procurement function within SARS by the recent appointment of a new Chief Procurement Officer within SARS, which we hope will also strengthen the relationship between SARS procurement and the CPO's office within National Treasury. We have re-established the Large Business Center and also adding alongside that an independent unit that will focus on wealthy individuals. We are renaming the Large Business Center as the business segment, large and international businesses, and for individuals it will be the individual segment for wealthy individuals and individuals with complex financial arrangements. We have re-established the litigation office and appointed a chief litigation officer, and we've re-established the compliance unit. The important issue is still something that is in progress. It is to strengthen our capability within the technology, information and technology area, and there we still have to make some senior appointments. The supernumerary position, you will recall there were about 60 of these positions. All of them have been placed, and we have changed our philosophy to EXCO by broadening the involvement, by giving more people the opportunity to be involved in the organization. We have flattened the leadership level, but most importantly, we have reviewed every one of the senior leaders, and we have dealt with the integrity issues that the report pointed us to. In terms of the remuneration of members' benefits for EXCO members, for now, as we said, we are following, there were split opinions on this, but for now we are following the conservative opinion by working with the Minister of Finance in terms of benefits for senior executives that sit on EXCO. The anti-corruption capacity, we have re-established a division that is focuses on the illicit and criminal activity. In terms of the operational investigation on issues such as VAT, the review is taken, but there's still, the basic implementation is done, but it's an ongoing process to strengthen the integrity of our refund system, because sadly, we still have a continued attack on our refund system by elements that are criminal, that have no intention to trade other than to extract benefit from the... So that really is one of those issues where the work is ongoing and we cannot declare victory. In terms of reference bodies to settle claims, you may remember that there was a dismantling of some of the capacities there, and the erstwhile commissioner became involved directly and personally in settling claims. We have addressed that. There are now very, very clear settlement committees, and the current commissioner is not a member of any of the settlement commission committees, and will only for any approval where the decision is made and a delegation of authority is required, the commissioner will become involved, but the commissioner is substantially not involved in any of the committees that settles debt or any other outstanding obligation by taxpayers. The issue of media statements have been substantively dealt with. The relationships with other state institutions, I can share with the committee very encouragingly, Chair and members, that we have a very, very good active working relationship with the NPA, the FIC, the Hawks, the SIU, as well as our colleagues in National Treasury and the General. And so all of those matters, we believe, SARS has been actively involved during the COVID period as a member of NatJoints, as a member of the JCPS cluster, as a member of the economic cluster. So we really are actively involved with the rest of government as colleagues. We've established relationships with our OECD colleagues and are now invited to speak and to contribute towards working teams and at other international gatherings. And this is very helpful in two ways. Firstly, it re-established SARS as a peer in the international community of tax revenue authorities and governments, but it also gives us access to our colleagues to learn, to do benchmarks, and to accelerate our own learning. Those are the recommendations that are implemented. Then those that are currently in progress, Chair, we have handed a number of matters over to the Director of Priority Crimes and the SIU and the NPA. And there it is now out of our hands, and so we are awaiting a recommendation by the Hawks in that regard. As far as the Gartner contacts are concerned, we have initiated negotiations with Gartner. We were supposed to have a follow-up visit and ongoing discussions, which for now has been placed on pause. We didn't believe that the last recommendation which they made earlier in this year was one that we would consider. So we will have to re-engage with them. We have issued letters of demand for monies we believe the former commissioner owes SARS, we will continue to follow up that money, which we believe is lawfully due to SARS. In terms of case selection and audit protocols, Chair, case selection is a very important function in SARS because it is how SARS decides it wants to select an individual or an entity for an audit or for any other investigative work. It is important that this is done in a manner that is beyond reproach, that SARS can never be accused of acting in any other way other than without fear, without favor, and without prejudice. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you are a township dweller, a member of parliament, a CEO of a business, a member of cabinet, or the president. In terms of how we administer our law, it has to be within a very, very high integrity environment. So we have reviewed this and we've expanded it, but also increasingly the use of data, artificial intelligence and technology will help us to select the correct cases, because there is no upside in getting this wrong in any way. And in the last in progress, Chair, which is really in addition to the supernumerary post, there was a number of staff who would have claimed that they were compromised or negatively impacted on because of certain actions during the period 2014 to about 2018. And we have substantively reviewed all of those who are internal. We have set up a listening campaign led by a pastoral approach to allow people to come forward and speak. We have looked at bringing back a few individuals who had specialist knowledge who could help us with the rebuilding process, and recruited some of these people as full-time employees, also in new positions. We have engaged with KPMG. You will recall that we recently announced a decision that SARS has taken in respect of the Sikakani report and the KPMG report. The conclusion, after extensive review of the reports itself, our independent application of our mind and taking legal counsel, we have arrived at the decision that we can no longer place reliance on the KPMG report as well as on the Sikekane report. We informed the authors of the decision of SARS, and KPMG, I have to say I am encouraged that they have expressed a willingness to work with SARS to address some of the reparation issues. And so we are currently involved with a few more of the internal issues, but they have been largely addressed. But then we have also commenced reparation of former employees, and I have begun to meet with some of those employees to begin a process of review and reparation. Chair, then, as I said, whilst we are reporting on the specific recommendation, our response has to be significantly broader, because the real project is not to implement the recommendations of the Nugent report on itself, but to engage and initiate a process of rebuilding SARS to what it needs to be. And so these are some of the matters that constitute that wider approach. The first is the rebuilding of SARS to institutional integrity. That is an end-to-end review, leaving no stone untouched, how we manage our processes, how we manage debt, how we conduct audits, how we manage our border posts, our excise and customs operations. So it's the entire end-to-end functioning of SARS that we have to address. If not, it's like removing cancer from one part of the body, but leaving it to fester in another part of the body. The whole body will become sick again. The second is very important. SARS cannot be successful if it does not have the public confidence and trust. This is a huge issue. It doesn't just affect SARS, because when the public loses confidence in government, it also loses confidence in SARS, because SARS is seen as part of government. And therefore, this has to be a whole of government approach to gain public confidence, but SARS is committed to do its part as far as that is concerned. The committee will also remember there was an issue around whether or not SARS has certain powers. I want to confirm unequivocally, Chair, that, and we have made this clear within SARS, that we will work strictly within the powers that is endowed into the commission of managing SARS, as is set out in the Tax Administration Act, the Customs Act, and we have clarified that with a senior counsel opinion, where and when and for what purposes SARS may gather intelligence or information. And that is confirmed as part of our governance framework within SARS, and we will continue to monitor against that. The recent report of the Inspector General having been withdrawn further confirms SARS's position in this regard. Chair, and I want to say that the message to any of our staff is we will not tolerate any behavior by any member of SARS. They will not have any protection by SARS if they step outside of that which is prescribed in law. It is a red card offense when members do not honor that which is required of us to do in law. The confidentiality of taxpayer information is another huge issue, and it's often contested in the public domain for reasons that only those who contest it can explain. You will be aware of the member between SARS and the public protector. This is not awaiting court ruling because it challenges Chapter 6 provisions, and we will await the outcome of the court in this regard. I spoke about the KPMG and the Sikekane reports, spoke about the establishment of a high net worth individual unit, and the ongoing enhancement of our customs operation. This was an area that was hugely neglected, but we have begun to re-engage with the World Customs Organization, with local stakeholders, to establish the authorized economic operator unit. And all of this modernization, Chair, now becomes very important, especially as we're entering the a period of the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement, mutual administration agreements with our partners across our borders, single windows, information exchange, and all of those modernization efforts now become more than ever important. Otherwise, we continue to compromise the integrity of the work we do. On the rebuilding of SARS, beyond simply what Nugent tells us to do, we continue to engage with our staff. Our staff is our biggest strength, but also our biggest weakness. If we don't manage and fully engage them, instill within them a sense of professionalism, but also a sense of pride. The ongoing engagement with stakeholders, we have, you will, if you look at our 9 strategic objective, strategic objective 8 is very explicit that we need stakeholders to be successful, and strategic objective 9 speaks to our reliance on public confidence as an important plank in building a relationship with the public that enhances our impact and the fulfillment of our mandate. Yes. We've also, as we have shared with you earlier on, reimagined SARS. We launched a new strategy based on a clear vision and strategic intent. We've begun to rearrange the way we work so that we can be more effective. We have a specific focus on the revenue recovery program. We have reactivated the Davis Tax Committee and will shortly be ready to hand the reports of this done between SARS and the commission and the Judge Davis to the minister for approval and then for public consumption after that. Then there is obviously the rebuilding of a capable leadership system within SARS. I am not going to go through this, but just to remind you, this is the work we have done and I've already shared with you so that you can have the confidence that while we are busy putting in place all of the blocks, the building blocks, and this is a challenge at the moment because of the times in which we live, government is constrained for funds, this impacts SARS. SARS is not yet the employer of choice it needs to be. But notwithstanding those challenges, we proceed with clarity of what has to be done. And we have shared that with you previously. We have moved from a functional organization where we have separate silos for tax service, taxpayer service for enforcement and for customs, which has meant that we frustrate taxpayers often because the one silo doesn't know what the other silo does. We have let ourselves down by not always honoring our compliance model, and we have not followed through on really international best practices which SARS itself had committed to but never really fully implemented, principles such as segmentation, a differentiated compliance approach, and to reduce the involvement of head office in the day-to-day running of SARS. And head office role is more to give strategic guidance, to allocate resources, and to hold the regions accountable for performance, but not to become the stumbling block in performance. And so that's really what the new arrangement seeks to address. As you can see on slide 31, that therefore is the current way in which we are organized, empowered regions close to the taxpayers so that we can have shorter turnaround times to resolve those issues, supported by either enabling or other operational functions to make the work more efficient. So that's really our new organizational arrangements. We've shared this before, so I won't spend time on it. And then within SARS, we have created the following committee structures that just strengthens the day-to-day governance of this. So you'll see, in addition to the cluster committees, there's a National Revenue Committee, there's the Regional Directors Forum for Taxpayer Engagement, there's an Enforcement Committee that has oversight of all enforcement action, even though it takes place in different functional divisions. There's a Customs Committee that has end-to-end oversight of customs, There's the people committee that looks at people issues and the governance and risk committee. So that's really the committee structure. Each of these with a terms of reference, with a chair that's been allocated, and membership that represents all the functions to ensure, chair, that we remain within a very healthy framework that gives the highest level of assurance of governance within SARS. Clearly, there is a lot of work still has to be done to get all of these committees to function well, to be properly capacitated, and as time goes on, we will accelerate our learning to make it more efficient. I want to end by coming back to our strategic intent, the 9 clear objectives. And again, as I said at the commencement, Chair, this is a response more broader, because when you opened up this session, Chair, you spoke about the primary function of SARS to ultimately collect revenue, and that, as we have shared before, this has been severely compromised by a weakened SARS, then further aggravated by a declining economy and a kind of another nail that as we all have to deal with given COVID. And it is therefore important that we have to raise the concern to this committee that this current project will not succeed at the current funding levels. We are engaging later today, in fact, with the Deputy Minister and our colleagues in Treasury to point this out one more time. And here's some graphs that just bears that out. The blue line is the tax revenue. The red is the GDP. And the line says in a healthy economy, you want the buoyancy ratio to be higher than one, which means that the tax revenue performance is higher than the GDP performance. So you'll see, for example, in 2004, 2005, the GDP nominally was 11.2%. The tax revenue was 17%. So the ratio was 1.55. And so you can see that ratio in the period 2004 to about 2007-08 was always higher than one. Then we had the 2008 crisis, South Africa went into recession, and you'll see that the revenue contracted relative to the GDP for those 2 years. Then as we recovered 2010, it went back to 1.18, 1.13, 1.22, 1.2. That's an evidence of a healthy SARS. Not an optimal SARS, because we can do much better than that because of our low levels of compliance, but that's an important indicator for you to address your concern, Chair, and I'm sure the concern of the committee members about the performance of SARS. When you then look at the period that we've then entered into, we see that there was a significant reduction in the cost of SARS. I think initially, because the concern about the integrity at SARS and the ability to spend that money wisely, but we have currently, as I will show you, continued to allocate funding to SARS, which is inadequate to its mandate. In fact, if we had continued the funding trend, SARS would currently be funded at more than 14 billion as opposed to the 10.2 billion. And so you can see, therefore, because of that, you will also see that there's international best practice that says SARS, a good revenue authority, should be funded at about 1% of its revenue, and SARS is currently well below that 1% of that revenue, 0.73%. Before the special adjustment budget, significantly below the international benchmark of 1%. So what has that caused? Now you can see from 2014, there's a steady decline of that buoyancy ratio. In 2014, it was still above one. And then the decline starts. So by 2016-17, it's at 0.97. Then you'll see it goes all the way down to, there has been a little blip in 2017-18, and that was largely because of the 1% VAT increase. That gives a little bit of a blip. Otherwise, that trend would have continued. And then you see in 2019, the beginning of a 1920, the beginning of that ratio being turned around. So last year, in a GDP nominally expanding by 4.6%, SARS was able to collect 7.1%. And that begins to also show you that if we have focus on revenue recovery, focusing on the right actions to address the weaknesses within SARS, there is money in the economy that is under-collected. We know that because of the increasing criminal activities. We know that because of the declining compliance levels. And therefore, it would really be quite a unfortunate situation if SARS cannot give effect to its mandate because of an inappropriate funding arrangement. You can see there, I'm not sure if you are looking at your screen, but you'll see in 2013-14, the actual grant received by SARS was $9.5 billion. The headcount of SARS was just over 14,000. If you run your eyes along, you'll see that in 1920, in last year, our funding was the same almost as the funding in 2013, $9.5 billion, with just over 12,000 employees. So you can see that something is seriously wrong. Now, we have empathy that the whole of government is resource constrained, but we would make a strong argument here to say that SARS is not a cost center in government. SARS is a revenue center. It's an investment center. And every cent that you allocate to SARS comes back with a multiplier eventually of between 10 to 100, depending on the area that you do. So not to ensure the adequate funding of SARS places a huge compromise, ultimately, on our fiscal integrity. This graph shows you how we have begun to not invest in the capital platform. This is the IT technology. It's the refresh of our basic infrastructure. In 2013-2014, we had well over 1.3 trillion of investment, and that has come all the way down last year to just over 300 million. We cannot continue on this trend. If we have to continue, we will simply share with you, committee, that we are fighting a losing battle. The current approach has resulted in an inability to replace critical skills that are essential to the effective and efficient functioning of SARS, the inability to maintain the current technology infrastructure for successive years now already, a significant underinvestment in the modernization of SARS in a context which is fast evolving. We are unable to do any forward planning because we have no funding certainty. National Treasury at any point in time can say we're taking away another 200 million. So not even the funding that we have at the beginning of the year is certain. So we can't plan anything forward. We've also compromised our value proposition, which has allowed us in the past to attract and to reward the scarce talent that is necessary to give effect to our mandate. And so we humbly submit, Chair, that the overall effect of underfunding SARS has resulted in a material negative impact on the institutional integrity of SARS, in its capability to give effect to its revenue collection mandate, and ultimately, therefore, to the fiscal integrity of South Africa. The cheapest money available to us is tax money. In the absence of that, we are borrowing money and therefore spending hard-earned money to service our debt rather than investing it in social programs and in much-needed areas of infrastructure. So Chair, I will pause there and hand back to my colleagues in Treasury. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner. Deputy Minister, is there any other officials who still have to make a presentation?
No, thanks, Chair. I think we're done for now. We'll willing to take questions, comments, and guidance from yourselves.
Okay. Thanks for the presentation. Sebuho, Alan, you will assist me with the honorable members who would like to ask clarity, speaking questions, and also make comments. My screen this side is not properly functioning. I can see Honorable Shibambu. Umhlonishwa Sikhosana, Louis, Tebu, is it the only three that we have on the screen? Honorable Shibambu, Sikhosana, Louis.
Yes, sir. For now, those three.
Okay. Let's start with okay. Honorable Shibambu, over to you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. There are just few issues that I want to point out, because it looks like part of this presentation that was made here is to smuggle some narratives which are not necessarily a reflection of reality. One of those narratives which is being smuggled here is that the appointment of the current SARS commissioner was transparent. It was not. He was not appointed transparently. There was a secret committee which, amongst other things, had Trevor Manuel, who had vested interest in the outcome of who must be SARS commissioner. And there's a litigation process where we are going to prove that there was nothing transparent about the appointment of the current SARS commissioner. And outside of the litigation which we're involved in, we should, as Parliament, talk to what should be the process of appointing a SARS commissioner. Like, why can't we bring into existence the system that we use to appoint a public protector or auditor general? Like, let's have Parliament involved in selection of a suitable candidate for position of a chief revenue collector in South Africa, because there are so many vested interests in terms of who just occupies that position, particularly with the current powers that a commissioner possibly has. It's one of the things that must be looked into as part of the legislative interventions that we should make as Parliament. So instead of the broad framework that a president will appoint a commissioner and then he goes to appoint a committee to secretly interview a sub-commissioner, that is problematic. Let us have a transparent parliamentary process of shortlisting and interviewing a potential sub-commissioner and then we'll take it from there. I think that will be much more sustainable. But also there has to be clarity in terms of the reporting lines of a commissioner. I'm more inclined on the option of having a board of SARS, like a much more effective board that will oversee the functions of a commissioner. So if we legislate that, it would mean that Parliament also must be involved in selection of that board. And of course, later on appointed by a president, like is the case with all other major appointments. But there has to be a board, because you would know that there was an incident before where there was no clarity of the reporting lines of the SARS commissioner, whether it's the minister or the appointing authority, which is the president. I think it's the same difficulty which characterizes the relationship between directors general with their ministers and the fact that those are appointed by the president. So there must be clarity in terms of the reporting lines, but a board will be much more adequate instrument and mechanism to oversee how a huge institution like SARS is managed. And that I propose that we should take that option as opposed to an Inspector General who will just be one person, and there's a difficulty with responsibilities that ultimately lie with one human being, and they can always be problematic. Now, the other issue, which I don't know why it's always closed over or it's not given attention, particularly with the current commissioner, is the issue of SARS perennial incapacity to address tax avoidance, transfer pricing, and basically all these sophisticated methods to erode the tax base. And all these reports that were given here from the Gas Commission and from what the Davis Committee has dealt with, a variety of things have always pointed to this phenomena of transfer pricing. But there's not yet a believable plan on how this is being dealt with. Like, there are so many concrete, like, undisputed evidence that we are losing billions of rands of potential revenue due to transfer mispricing and all these tax avoidance systems that are implemented by multinational companies. I've not heard anything believable from the current SARS commissioner in terms of what is to be done. What do we do with this massive transfer mispricing that is eroding the tax base in the manner that it is? And that gets worse when there's still no capacity and no clarity in terms of how do we collect the revenue from the e-commerce and digital economy. We've made promises here that there's going to be a special presentation. We are still waiting for it in terms of what happens. We understand the multinational character of collecting revenue from e-commerce. But what is South Africa doing? What are the proposals that you want to give to the international, multinational space to say that this is what, multilateral space, to say that this is what we should then deal with? Now, the question which must be responded to is, what does SARS seek to achieve by recalling the Skakania report and the KPMG report on the rogue unit? And it's not true that the Inspector General on Intelligence report is completely off the table, because we are going to court to say that it must not be classified, one, that it is still a legitimate report, because the rogue unit existed. Whoever can say what? There was an element in SARS which this current administration is trying to gloss over and trying to hide. There was an illegal component and element in SARS which was involved in illegal activities. That is why Ivan Pillay and Johan van Leeuwenberg were arrested, and there was a solid case which was mysteriously withdrawn by the current NDPP. But the reality of the matter is that there was a rogue unit, and there is no one who has yet presented an alternate clear dispute to the fact that there was a rogue unit which was hounding people and spying on people illegally. And that is what the former head of intelligence is asking to present in the Zondo Commission. And if that is presented, everyone else will realize that what SARS is doing is just to drive a certain narrative which they sponsor journalists to report as if there was no rogue unit. There was a rogue unit in SARS which was involved in wrongdoing. And whether you withdraw the Skakania report, the KPMG report, does not take away the fact that there was illegal activity in SARS, and you are trying to withdraw all these things because you think that you will later on utilize your media platforms to dominate your narrative. It is not going to happen. We will be able to prove, even with credible witnesses who are working at SARS, that there is a unit that was illegally spying on people. It is still existing to this day. It harasses people. It spies on people for political narrow purposes. So this thing of SARS being utilized for political purposes is being used. And this explains why we had secret and untransparent interview of the current commissioner who is continuing the agenda of the cabal in SARS. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks, sir. Gushbam. Mshonisho, Kozan.
Ngiyathokoza Sihlalo, ohloniphekileyo begodu ngilotshisa umhlonitshwa isekela lakangcongqotshe amalunga woke ahloniphekileko ukomishnara weSARS nabaphathi bonke beNational Treasury. I think we welcome the presentation, Honorable Chair, both from the National Treasury and from SARS. Well, one question still remains. I think the question that you raised at the beginning, Honorable Chair, that how do we synchronize the recommendations of these various commissions and committees? Because I think Mr. Momonya, I think, well, he gave us the background of these various commissions, starting from the Franzen Commission of 1969, coming Arts Commission, up to Nugent Commission and their aims, to say what was the aim of this particular commission versus the other. However, where we stand, are we now at this point supposed to only look at Nugent Commission recommendations and forget about all these other previous commissions and committees? Or are we supposed to, as we implement or as we oversight the implementation of Nugent Commission, we have to also look back at the recommendations of other commissions, like the Arts Commissions and so forth? How do we synchronize that particular process as we deal with a Nugent Commission recommendation? The second point, part of the recommendation which has been highlighted, I think, by Mr. Momonya, which has been made by the Nugent Commission, the issue of the establishment of an inspectorate to enhance governance of SARS, as it provides a mechanism to provide oversight over SARS functioning in order to detect abuse in a manner that protects SARS' primary mandate and taxpayers' confidentiality. So I want to know as to how far is the process, that process of appointing an inspectorate or an inspector general, because I think it's a very key office to play oversight to SARS. Is it perhaps part of the recommendations that will be implemented by next year? Because I think he made mention, especially in relation to legislation, that we're likely to see legislation coming to Parliament and stuff like that. So the issue of appointment of the Inspector General, how far is that particular process? Are we likely to see it happening next year or what? Thirdly, Honorable Chair, the SARS Commissioner, I think, has indicated that in total, Nugent Commission has made 16 main recommendations. But when you split it into sub-recommendations, there are 27. However, he said that 10 of these 27 recommendations falls under the mandate of the National Treasury, of which one of them, it relates to issues of procurement, of the procurement policy, and the other 9 relates to matters of governance of SARS. So 10, which all in all is 10 recommendations that falls under the mandate of the National Treasury, which then, in terms, if my arithmetic serves me well, we should have made 17 out of 27. If we say 10 recommendations falls under the mandate of the National Treasury, it means SARS should remain with 17. However, he says they've got 19 recommendations that falls under SARS. So I think in terms of my own arithmetic, it should be 17, not 19. Now, in one of the recommendation, which I think is the last recommendation, which are those the recommendations that are still in progress, it says that they are going to recruit former employees. Well, I just want to know, is that not going to compromise SARS, I mean, to have a recommendation in black and white that says we are going to recruit former employees. And when you look at the labor laws of this country, well, I know that the intention is good, because some, I think, were fired without following proper procedures. Others had to resign because of the situation that was there at that particular time. But if you've got a recommendation in black and white that says we are deliberately going to engage in a process of recruiting former employees, what do the labor laws of this country say about that? Is that not going to compromise us as an institution? We find that other people would feel that this is an unfair labor process wherein adverts are made, people are applying, but it is already known that, you know, these posts are reserved for former employees. It's only former employees that are going to be employed. I just want to know that. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Mshonisha Kosani. Honorable Lewis, over to you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. It's a pleasure always to listen to this team giving presentations. I always say that amongst all the bad news in that's happening in South Africa and the really terrible state that our economy is in, it is great to see that at least some institutions in our government are still making progress in the right direction and not in the wrong direction. So, you know, I do have a high degree of confidence that SARS is slowly but surely heading in the right direction. That does not mean that there is not still a great deal of work to be done. We might be on step number 25 or 30 out of 100 steps that need to be taken in the right direction. But the point is that we are heading towards greater integrity, greater transparency, greater rigor and application of the law without fear or favor. And I would say that when people react very negatively to that and try to fight against the progress that SARS is making, I think the motives for that should be very clear to us all. So thank you for the presentation and well done on the progress that you are making. I just have two questions which I'd like to address to you. I suppose this is to the Commissioner. We have for the last 2 years in budget speeches heard verbal commitments to allocate additional resources to SARS. I just went back and looked quickly at the MTBPS of 2019, and there was R1 billion allocation over 2 years, 500 per year. And then there was another additional small allocation this October in the MTBPS. So I'd like to just ask you to address directly, please, what is the exact nature of the problem that you are talking about? Because it does seem that there has been an additional allocation. Is it that it is woefully inadequate, or is it that it follows a greater reduction in earlier years? I just want you to set out that in a little bit more detail, please. I do agree, though, with the analysis that this is cheap money. And, you know, if we are now paying after Friday's downgrade, one expects that we'll be paying higher on borrowing costs, then it makes sense that you allocate resources for raising of additional funds where those funds can be raised at the cheapest possible price. And it's a no-brainer that is in additional revenue from SARS right now rather than from debt. So I agree with that analysis. I suppose then my question should also not only be to the Commissioner, but also to the Deputy Minister, and maybe he wants to comment on that funding question as well, please. Then following on from that, this is a question I think for the Commissioner, is there is a noticeable decline in South African society around compliance and what is referred to as tax morality. I'm sure that you can see it in your own life. I'm sure that everyone in this committee can see it in their own lives. When you go to coffee shops, when you go to restaurants and other shops and so on, there's an increasing number of places where you notice cash prices and credit card prices differing, cash discounts and so on. One really does feel that there's a crisis of credibility, not at SARS, because SARS is heading in the right direction, but just the continuous assault of corruption stories coming out of the coronavirus lockdown, coming out of the PPE scandals, coming out of Zondo and so on, that are shaking people's confidence in whether I am making a valuable contribution to society by paying my taxes or not, and whether I can't do something better with the money. So this is a huge, actually an existential crisis for SARS, because you can't ever meet your revenue targets in isolation. You know, you have to meet them in the context, in a particular social context, where tax morality and compliance is on the decline. And I wonder what Treasury and SARS are doing to work together to try and address this issue. And I'd like you to please give some comments on that. It's not just about tightening up enforcement. Of course, that is part of it. But I think that's actually a relatively small part of it. And so I'd like you to, both of you, if you can, to give comments on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Lewis. Over to you. Okay. Over to you, Deputy Minister, National Treasury officials, and the SARS Commissioner, to respond to the clarity-seeking questions from the three members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask the Commissioner in Momo to respond, and then I'll come later. Or any other...
Thank you.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chair, and the members who have raised the issues. Chair, I will obviously not comment on the appointment of Commissioner. Safe to say that I continue to do my work and will do the best I can until I'm told that I shouldn't be doing it anymore. The issue of the functions of SARS are set in law. SARS does not wake up and decide what it wants to do, how it wants to do. I'm not going to respond to all of the issues around a so-called rogue unit narrative. But I want to make a serious request to any of the members on this committee, or for that matter, any other member of South Africa who is listening right now. If you have evidence of any wrongdoing at SARS, it would be the most responsible thing to do to present it to us. If we then don't act on it, we are complicit. Until such time, we will continue to do our work without fear, without favor, and without prejudice. I cannot be distracted by any narrative that makes suggestions about certain prevalences at SARS without presenting us with the evidence that it is so. And to suggest that there are members at SARS who would have this knowledge, I would like to also to have that knowledge, because it would serve no purpose for us to harbor criminals or to harbor anyone who seeks to undermine the important work that we have to do. I want to give this committee an unequivocal commitment that as the Commissioner of SARS, I am not aligned to any agenda other than the mandate of SARS. I am not working and I'm not beholden to anyone other than the mandate that is cast in law and that which I can do in good conscience. In terms of what is SARS doing as far as transfer pricing and international taxes. I want to just also say that can we do more? I'm the first to say we should do significantly more. And in fact, I want to share with the committee, I mentioned earlier, that we will soon be, in fact, we have completed, we are rounding up the report of the work that we have done in the last 12 months by SARS and the team with Judge Davis to point out exactly the areas where we believe there is huge revenue leakage. But we are not waiting for the report before we are doing anything. I can therefore tell you that SARS has designed a compliance program that identifies all of the areas of non-compliance. And to date, in this current year, the revenue that we have collected from those activities is over 90 billion rand. Specifically, we have conducted 53 base erosion and profit shifting audits. Last year, we raised 6 billion assessments through this activity alone, and our year to date, we have raised 3 billion of assessments. So I want to give the committee the assurance that to the extent that we have resources, we will leave no stone unturned to do the work that is required of us. And we will continue to report as we do in our annual report and when this committee invites us to do so, to come back and to share more detail in that regard. I have requested, and so I am, and this will probably only be next year given where we are, Chair, but I have in the previous engagement with the committee said, I think there is probably the need for a session on its own, and maybe after the release of the Davis Tax Committee, the Tax Gap Report, it would be a good time to come back to this committee and tell you the work that we need to do, both in terms of aggressive tax planning and non-compliance, as well as the illicit and criminal activities. I really think it warrants a session on its own. On the issue raised of the recruitment of former employees, I think the Honourable Kafana is very correct in saying that it is not without its risk. But again, I want to give the assurance that we will be always be mindful to balance the need that SARS has with the capability that an individual would bring, balanced against any of the unintended consequences that may otherwise be so. But at the same time, I want to say we have to follow our conviction, because the re-engagement of a former employee, and unfortunately we live in a country where there is mixed narratives, we will never be able to make any appointment that will bring pleasure to all of the constituencies, regardless of what narrative they advance. And so we will be guided by our conscience, and where there is a sound basis on which to re-engage a former employee, we will follow the law, but we certainly will do so if it serves the best interest of SARS. The issues on funding, again, there is a number of slides that I've shared. I won't go back to the slides, but suffice to say that you have to look at the funding trend. And maybe I will share one slide, because that does make the point better than what I could make. you give me a minute, I will share that slide. This slide says that in 2013, the funding at SARS was $9.5 billion, and then you can see progressively 9.4 the next year, 9.3 the following year. Then it went up to just over 10, then 10.2. Then it dropped again to 9.8 and then to 9.5. Now, the numbers mentioned in the minister's October report last year of R1 billion over 2 years gets lost when the final numbers are allocated because the base is no longer correct. The base was downward adjustment around about 2013-14 by R1.5 billion and then never corrected again. And so in fact the increase in SARS in nominal terms is almost flat, and in real terms have in fact declined. And so I think the occasional announcement about an additional money has to be seen in the context of the broader funding trend that SARS has also by the fact that at one point when you are in a building phase, you would expect your revenue, your budget allocation to be between 1 and 1.2% of your revenue that you collect because you're building infrastructure, you're expanding, you're modernizing. In a normal maintenance phase, you would expect that to be at about 1%. SARS has dropped down to 0.73%. And so we have all of the trend lines and the data points to suggest that the funding of SARS has lagged. It's not a single year event, it's a multiple year event that has taken effect since 2013 for all the reasons that it may have been affected. We now have created a problem that is 6 years old, and unless it is addressed, will severely compromise SARS to give. So we have to reset the baseline, and then you have to try and get back at least to the 1% of funding under normal circumstances. This year is obviously an aberration, and as the graphs have borne out, that when SARS is adequately funded and focused on its mandate, it can be expected to deliver a revenue performance that as a minimum correlates to the expansion in the nominal economy, but even if it recovers some of the compliance and the tax revenue leakages, it can do better than 1% as our history has borne out and as last year has also demonstrated. On the last issue of compliance trends, we are very clear that we have to do a few things in addition to the work I've shared with you on where we have seen the declining levels of compliance in specific areas, multinationals, employers not complying, the abuse of assessed losses, the transfer pricing areas, as previously mentioned, complex arrangements by wealthy individuals, and then just across the board, general slip of compliance across all taxpayer types. We have and continue to do our analysis of that, and in response to that, we have to do a few things very well, because this is also not, what is not required is a transactional response, but rather a longer-term strategic response to fix the entire system. So the first thing we continue to do in terms of our strategic objectives is to do more work to clarify and to give certainty to what the obligations are that taxpayers have. That creates the moral persuasion for taxpayers to comply. If no one tells you are doing wrong, then you have a sense that you can get away with it. And so that's what we are doing. The second is to work very hard to make it easier for taxpayers to fulfill those obligations. And this year, for example, we have launched 30 additional online applications to allow taxpayers to fulfill all of their obligations online, obviously supported by the need to also respond to COVID. Social distancing and other measures have just given a boost to this level of work we have done. We have spent well over 15 million rand this year just to do some of these responses, not only to COVID, but also to improving our systems. We have been able to disintermediate over 600,000 transactions which otherwise would have come to our branches, and taxpayers are able to do this online. That has a huge impact on compliance. The 3.6 million taxpayers that we were able to do an auto assessment with has a service benefit, but a huge compliance benefit. And we have done that with great success in this current year under the COVID conditions. And then it is the longer term capability of building our ability to detect and respond to non-compliance. And there we need to deepen our investment in the ability to collect and manage data, to build machine learning algorithms and artificial intelligence, and use technology to improve our enabling environment. And then beyond that, it is to improve our relationship with stakeholders, because tax practitioners, professional bodies, business associations all have a stake in the game, and we are working with them because they are all part of either contributing or detracting to the compliance program. And then ultimately, we have to visibly be seen to be a revenue authority that can be trusted, that can work in a manner that is beyond reproach. So what I'm sharing is it's really a strategic and systemic approach to addressing compliance rather than simply a knee-jerk reaction to one or two incidences, as may sometimes be suggested we need to do. Chair, let me pause there. Hand over to Momo if Momo wants to add to any of the questions.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. I think, Chair, just trying to go to my notes here. I think, Chair, the issue of the board and Inspector General and so on, these are also not mutually exclusive proposals. And as I said, you know, we've been having a lot of discussion. As I said, there's pros and cons to all these proposals. And that's why we said the policy paper will deal with it. We don't have, I mean, even amongst ourselves, we have Treasury, SARS, and even within our organizations, we have many different views. And I should add, Chair, that these are not specific to South Africa as well, because we've looked internationally at other countries. And as your tax collection agency evolves, I think the issue of governance and mechanisms to ensure that there's no abuse, even when you have a good commissioner, there could be abuse. When you have a bad commissioner, you can have lots more abuse. And the big issue then is how can you and how quickly can you put corrective mechanisms in place? And my personal view is that there may be merit in all of these institutions, but we also need to do it in a way where it doesn't become a bureaucratic nightmare. There's no substitute. You know, I always say when you also deal with corruption, there's no substitute for making sure that an accounting honest officer, for example, is honest. Okay. If we don't trust an accounting officer for being honest, well, then we should look at our appointment processes. They shouldn't really be in that job in a sense, okay? But the problem often is that you got to reduce the risk of making bad appointments by looking at your processes. You've got to make sure that even when the process has a good person in charge, that whilst they're in that position, bad practices also don't develop, shortcuts get taken, and so on. And I guess what we're trying to say is a revenue collection agency really needs to have the confidence of the country. If it doesn't, tax morality suffers. We've had the many years of the capture of SARS have really undermined tax morality. All the corruption that we've seen, people don't feel like paying their taxes. And I don't have to make the point that if a state cannot collect revenue, there's no state that can function efficiently and effectively. We have huge demands in our country, and it's important that we restore the credibility of SARS, that we get the governance mechanisms in place and so on. And Chair, and that's why I think even the comments made, I think, on so on, I don't want to get into specific comments, but where I think allegations are made, you know, people should raise them in the right forums. I think we recently had we're in the process of appointing the FSCA commissioner. We had Open Secrets that also wanted us to have interview processes that are open to TV cameras. Now, I don't take a view either way, but I'm saying there are pros and cons again to having an open interview process and a closed one. And some of the consequences are that many people choose then not to apply. Sometimes they only because they don't want their current employer to know that they've applied for another job, especially when it's a high-level job. And therefore, we need to look at appropriate forms of transparency, appropriate forms of accountability. And I would contend that the SARS process was the fairest process for any commissioner after 1994. And there's very few processes within government, I believe, that can compare with the transparency and integrity of that process. And I think we can also look at examples where there have been open public processes. It doesn't mean that we got the best persons appointed. So, you know, any process is not going to necessarily give us the best candidate. I think that there are pros and cons. And yes, Parliament should look at the pros and cons when we bring the legislation and decide. And to the extent that anybody feels that the process has not been fair, they have the appropriate legal mechanisms to go. I mean, when we were taken to court on the FSCA process, the view of the Minister of Finance prevailed over the application that were made by two NGOs. And not that we differ with the NGOs about the issue of transparency. I think it's just the appropriate levels of transparency and public participation in these processes. But something worth debating about, because we do need more transparency and confidence in SARS. On the other issue, I think that Honourable Skosana asked, for example, what I said in the presentation is we have to legislate for those positions like Inspector General. So the question is we have to put in place legislation, which I said we hope to bring next year, and hope SCOF holds us to account for that, so you make sure we do it. And once the legislation is enacted, it's only then that such appointments can be made. So the first time it can be made is probably in 2022, I would guess. There are some positions that could be appointed, but without having the legal force. So, for example, it's possible to have some of the recommendations implemented, even though the law doesn't specifically require it, it's not illegal to do so. Honorable Kasana, thanks for pointing out the weaknesses in our arithmetic. I think we should have explained some of the recommendations that's overlap. They involve, you know, both institutions. Some don't involve the institutions at all because perhaps they've been done and so on. But we'll try and just take stock and maybe sort it out so you can see where there's an interaction, you know, where there's perhaps double counting and where perhaps we're not counting because it's been done already. We can provide that. I haven't had time now to go through it. I think, Chair, I'm trying to think. I think, Chair, just to make the whole point, I would differ with my good friend, the Commissioner. Many of the agencies say, you know, they must, their funding must be autonomous, and that if they don't get it automatically, that undermines the independence. Yes, it can when government decides not to provide funds, and clearly it cripples the agency. The question, I think, is that to the extent that for major projects there's still oversight, it involves funding, I would contend the budget process is still the best way to allocate funding. Having said that, I think we are going through tough times, as you see in the MTPPS. And frankly, when budgets have been cut, it's not like, I mean, every day you see a headline, this body cannot do its work because Treasury is not giving its money. I should point out, the fiscal framework is set by Cabinet. Yes, we are in serious problems fiscally. Yes, there is a shortage of funds for the functions that we would like to perform. And this is something clearly that gets referred to Cabinet for it to make the right decisions on how to balance all these different objectives. But I think we hear the Commissioner that to the extent that he doesn't have certainty in funding, and the funding is clearly not enough, it does impact on his ability to run the agency and to collect the funds that we expect. So it is something that certainly internally, as the Commissioner indicated, that we are engaging on. But it's very tough out there, Chair, to deal with this. I think I've dealt, Chair, with all the issues that have been raised. Chair, I should say, too, that no revenue agency, because I know it's been said before, can operate without some sort of intelligence capability. And Chair, I think that often the word intelligence is misunderstood, is perhaps understood differently. I'm not talking about intelligence in terms of the spooks and the secret services, of which I know very little. But, you know, intelligence is used in business from one rival to, you know, get someone else to comment. You get the Economist Intelligence Unit, for example. If you look at the Financial Intelligence Center, they generate information around suspicious transactions. And yes, there are controls about who has access to what. They're not necessarily made public. But I would contend, and I think this has been said, if anybody feels that such a function is not legal, and Judge Nugent has commented on it, that it's not illegal. Yes, it doesn't mean that specific activities then that get undertaken may or may not be legal, but then we need to assess it for those actions. But there is no way that SARS can operate if it doesn't have that capability. It is legal unless someone can show us otherwise and do so by taking us to court if necessary. And to the extent that it has that capability, that's the only way it's going to deal with illicit tobacco, for example. If you don't have that capability, you will never defeat the criminal syndicates that operate. So I would argue that this is a critical capability for SARS to have. And to the extent that there are differences, let's find a way to quickly resolve those issues because it impacts on the capability of SARS. Thank you, Chair. Oh, dear, I don't know if you can.
Chair, I think the questions have been adequately responded to. The question on the appointment of the Commissioner, just to state that it's not for the first time that Honorable Shibambu is raising this question, and we've responded on many occasions to this question, Chair. And I do think that we do need to separate between the appointment of the Commissioner in terms of the current rules. And insofar as we're concerned, as we've said previously, there is nothing untoward. The process was in line with the current rules and regulations insofar as the appointment of the SARS commissioner is concerned. And that must be separated from new proposals on how we seek to appoint a commissioner. And those are the things that we must come back to in terms of the new proposals, including on whether we need a board of SARS or Inspector General, or we need both. Those are the things that even amongst ourselves as a finance family, we're not agreeing. It's a matter of internal debate on some of those issues. And I think through that discussion paper that we're putting together, we'll have to come back even to the committee on what our thinking is. And the committee can also provide guidance insofar as the governance issues of SARS are concerned. On the funding issue, Honorable Lewis, I think your observation is correct that in the current MTF, there has been 1.2 billion increase. Now, with its own imperfections, we will be discussing further. I mean, this afternoon, I'll be meeting the commissioner to discuss the same issue. And I think the funding of SARS is very, very, very critical. Without funding of SARS, we won't be able to do many of these things that we've asked SARS to undertake. However, it's not only SARS which is in a difficult financial situation, and we do understand that SARS is not a cost center. When we invest in SARS, we are investing in our ability to generate revenue, which is quite important for us to reduce the borrowing quantum, for us to finance what we have to finance as government, as the state. But at the moment, we are seriously constrained, and we will be having conversations in that context of a financial situation in our country, and what role SARS will probably play in that regard, and what support will SARS require in order for us to enable SARS to do some of the things that they have to do. And some of the things, Chair, when I visited the port in Durban, and one of the things that in the context of the structural reforms, Operation Vulindlela, on how we can make our port competitive. And we went there together with Custom. And one of the things that came out was the fact that there's so many agencies of government which require different information, the police, Home Affairs, SARS, in terms of the movement of goods at our ports. And we said, look, it would be important just for us to have a single window platform which will enable importers and exporters to really have one platform from which they can generate the same information. That project may not necessarily be funded by SARS only. We may have to ask what could be the funding. So some of the things will really require some creative funding solutions to enable SARS and government as a whole to be efficient and improve our competitiveness in order to make the ease of doing business in South Africa much easier and better. But those are the conversations that we'll continuously have. And like I said, this afternoon, we'll be meeting the commissioner to find ways of assisting this important institution to perform its task. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. I see Honorable Lewis want to make a follow-up. Over to you, Honorable Lewis.
I want to ask about the results of the NIDS-CRAM study, Commissioner. Obviously, very, very concerning findings for the tax base. And I haven't, forgive me if you have issued comments on this and I have not seen it, but I have not seen any comment issued by SARS on this or updated taxpayer numbers. It might be that you will release updated taxpayer numbers now that the season is closed. But, you know, on the face of it, these numbers look utterly devastating for the tax base. What they define as lower middle class, I'm just looking here, 22 to 40,000 rand per month, has dropped from 3.5 million to 1.5 million, a 44% decline in those employees. Upper middle class, which they define from 40 to 75,000 rand a month, has declined from 1.9 million to 800,000, a 50% decline. And top end, 75,000 per month plus has gone from 800 to 400,000, a 50% decline. I mean, if these numbers sustain, it represents the absolute decimation of the South African tax base. So I would like you to comment on them and just let us know when you will be releasing your own updated figures on the size and makeup of the tax base. Thank you.
Thanks. Are there other clarity-seeking questions or comments from members before we move to the next item? Honorable Shivam?
I want the Green Minister to clarify the point that he was making about the multiple agencies at the ports of entry. I had thought that the border management agency outside of customs collections sought to resolve that problem. So I understand if that still becomes a problem, even after the border management border management agency act has been passed. How does it reconcile what he has said now with the fact that there is a BMA act?
Okay, thanks. Those are the follow-up questions from the two members. Over to you, Deputy Minister, and your team.
May I ask the Commissioner to first answer a moment to deal with the other questions that have been asked, and then I'll come back to the issue on the single window platform that I spoke about.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister. The concern that Honourable Hugh Lewis is raising is a concern that we share. I am not aware of the recent NIDS-CRAM study that he refers to. But just from our vantage point, as we had previously reported, we have seen an increase in the year-on-year applications for tax directives, which suggests higher than normal number of people that are being retrenched. We have seen the results of the 2.2 million rand job losses. Many of them would be positive contributors to the tax base. And then we've also seen other areas in applications for liquidations and business rescues. So we will update that report as we continue to report our revenue numbers and the analysis thereof. But I am sure it will align to the NIDS-CRAM report that you referred to. But I mean, the overall point that we should be concerned about a contraction of the tax base for various reasons is a very valid concern. And so within SARS, we also are addressing that firstly through the tax gap report that I referred to earlier on, but also have initiated a tax base broadening stream of work because we do believe that the current tax base is significantly underrepresented by those who ought to be on the tax base. And again, there's a whole host of reasons for that. But to just give you the assurance, it is an area of focus, and that has been heightened by the impact of a contracting economy. So it's not COVID that started the downward trend. We have seen a downward trend already before COVID. COVID has just given it an accentuated rate in terms of its decline. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable Shibambu is right about the Border Management Act. All I was saying that the Act does not give you systems, and the idea of a single window platform is about realizing, putting a system which will help us to operationalize the, for instance, the customer declaration, so that not everyone asks the same things insofar as the customer declaration is concerned. So I was simply talking about a system which could be the platform to accommodate everyone who really is interested in the declaration of goods. So it's from that point of view, we are fully aware that the Act has set the legislative framework through which we have to collaborate as different actors, say in any border, including at our port. So it's a question of a system that I was referring to, that even in that context, there has to be conversations amongst different state organs, agencies that are interested in the same thing, so that they start just single platform from which they can generate or get the information, instead of getting information from different platforms. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister, the Commissioner, the DG, officials from Treasury and SARS, honorable members. Just in conclusion, to say that, Commissioner, you have raised the issue of recruiting former employees, and Honorable Kosana has made a point in that regard. I think let's do it in a proper manner. It should not be that SARS deliberately wants to get people who have resigned and those who have been fired through certain processes back into the institution without following the due process of recruitment. Because it has got a deeper meaning. You know, in the apartheid era, we used to have what we call a job reservation policy, where certain jobs were reserved for certain races and for certain people. So we are raising this because we come from a very painful background. And that process should not deny young people opportunities. Because as we speak, the people who are adversely affected by unemployment are the young people. So we should not have a system that is going to close out young people. Women, we have got a deliberate policy to affirm women in this country. And the previously disadvantaged, the blacks in general, and the Africans in particular. So we are going to be looking at that process very closely as a committee, so that it complies with the current policy of this government. It's a good initiative, but it should not be done on the expense of the population groups that I've spoken about, and also undermine prevented the racialization of the sector. Secondly, the issue of ethics, Commissioner, is very important. In October, I was reading the newspapers and also following the social media platforms. There was information about the artist, Mr. Mzwakhe Mbuli, that he's owing so much to SARS and SARS is going to do the following. Can we stop doing those things? Why was Mzwakhe Mbuli's tax information in the public domain? Because the tax and whosoever is a compliant or a law-abiding citizen, the relationship between SARS and the tax, what do we call it, all of us who pay tax to a client, the SARS and a client's information should be confidential, I believe. The same applies with a lawyer and a client, a doctor and a patient. Gone are the days when we wake up, we find that the taxpayer's information was splashed all over the newspapers. We come from that painful past. And I think you must emphasize to your employees that we'll be not tolerant as public representatives. Whosoever, whether a politician, an ordinary person, that their information about his tax returns are all over. I was worried when I read about this case. I decided to bring the case of Mr. Mzwakhe Mbuli because I read about it in October, so that I don't just speak in general terms. And because the attitude that the public has because of where we come from is that SARS is used to fight political battles. So let's keep the information of taxpayers confidential. It can only be accessed by law enforcement agencies, not by newspapers. I think you have spoken about enhancing the collection of revenue throughout, Deputy Minister, the officials from Treasury and the Commissioner. Let's make sure that we, while improving on the governance of SARS, at the same time, we must vigorously pursue a revenue collection enhancement strategy. Because surely what we should be concerned about, we are getting downgraded, tax collection is going down, expenditure is going up, debt to GDP ratio is going up, and the only solution is to increase revenue. So let it be known to the public that this is how we are going to improve on revenue collection. We acknowledge what you are doing in terms of governance. However, you should do more on enhancing the strategy to collect revenue. And in that regard, we are also going to be making follow-up on the timelines that have been presented by Mr. Momoniat in regard to the implementation of the recommendations. So this was quite a very important meeting, as we have been raising the matter of the two commissions and the committee's recommendations as to how are you going to make sure that they get synchronized, because they remain relevant and they complement each other. They are not contradictory. We didn't want to go into details. I think it's the Davis Committee, if I'm not mistaken, that talks about deputy commissioners and their powers and a whole range of other issues. That will be for another day. But what we are more interested now in is to improve the governance and the management of SARS as a revenue collection agency, and improve on the revenue as the country is facing very serious financial challenges. So thanks very much, Deputy Minister, the DG, and his officials, the commissioner, officials from SARS, the PBO, and all the parliamentary officials present here, and members of the committee. Unless there are what we call announcements, Secretariat, before we close the meeting.
Chair, if I may come in.
You are not allowed to come in. I'm closing the meeting, Mr. Mumunia. Let's stick to protocol and decorum of the meeting. I'm taking announcements now. Alan and Tebuka, are there announcements?
None, sir, except of the meeting tomorrow.
Okay. There's a meeting tomorrow, honorable members. So thanks very much. The meeting is adjourned.